Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 36. I'm Rob Wright, editor of Search Security, and I'm here as usual with my site editor, Peter Loschen.
Hi, Rob.
Peter, it's good to see you.
It's always good to be here.
I mean, we were just in here a few days ago, but it's good to see you again.
I saw you 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Before we came down.
That's true. No, I mean, we were in here earlier this week discussing CES. After
that's
I,
right.
Because I wasn't here last week. And now we're back at it.
That's right.
At it again in Chernobyl in our little private therapy session to get our angst and anxiety over cybersecurity failings out of the way into the public airwaves.
I'm nodding.
You are nodding.
I'm nodding my head, yes.
So let's discuss. It's been a while since I guess we've discussed a new threat, or maybe not a new threat, but sort of a recontextualized threat, an adapted threat. We've done a lot on data breaches, Yahoo, etc. Done a lot on, you know, things like IoT threats,
botnets, yep.
But so this is something a little different.
That's right.
It's Doxware. And for those that don't know, here's just a brief description of what we're talking about. Doxware is a type of malware, I guess similar to ransomware. It's also sort of been known as previously as extortionware, where an attacker gains entry into your systems or your network, captures your data, encrypts it, but instead of saying, I'm going to hold this data indefinitely encrypted and you can't get it unless you pay me, the attacker says, I've got your data and I'm going to release it to the public unless you pay me. And usually the targets on the receiving end of the Doxware are apparently companies that maybe don't want their information exposed to the public. And I have some thoughts about what type of information we're dealing with here, but
is it companies or is it individuals as well?
It's companies, it's individuals. Well, so this is a great point. It's probably individuals within companies that it sounds like, you know, from the article that we had on our site, Search Security, from senior reporter Michael Heller, that individuals are being targeted and that it's their private sort of correspondence, communication, information that they don't want getting out in the open. And the first thing I thought of when I read this story was Sony and Sony Pictures Entertainment. And I mean, you think about the net of that attack. Yes, it was the fact that that movie, The Interview, the comedy, which I thought was fun, was not released in theaters because of a vague terrorist threat. But the initial sort of fallout from that attack was the fact that the attackers got into the network pretty easily and got emails and communications from top executives and put them out in the open and made them look really, really bad, and resulted in a couple of at least one major firing. I think the president, Amy Pascal, of Sony was ended up resigning. So, yeah, I mean, that's the first thing I think of. So the idea of extortionware, or the idea of you know, attacking someone, gaining access to that information. I mean, we just saw in this election cycle. So John Podesta, the chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign, getting his Google account breached and his correspondence, his emails, his information, his documents spread all over the place. Now, I doubt he was ransomed, so this is a little different. So this is sort of a new spin on the idea, the concept of ransomware. It's like you've got the data and you're holding it hostage, but instead of saying we're going to hold it indefinitely, it's like we're going to throw it in the wild, and you're going to be embarrassed by it.
Well, okay, so you good points all. That, absolutely. The thing about Doxware is it seems like it's an evolution of the whole let's call it black hat economy.
Yes.
But so we've got You thought of Sony first. My first thought was General Petraeus.
Oh, yeah.
And all those Ashley Madison people.
Oh.
And that kind of thing. Because that's, I mean, let me pose a question to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a, let's say you got hit by doxware somehow.
Yes.
And you've got a message on your screen that says your corporate laptop has been compromised.
Mm-hmm.
It's been encrypted. And we are looking through it, and we've found X, Y, or Z on there that you don't want to be made public.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell me truthfully, if that happened to you right now, would you care, or would you just get your system reimaged and start over?
I mean, it depends on the price. Well, first of all, I'll just say they don't have any embarrassing information or data on this. On my laptop, other than these podcast episodes, you know what I'm saying, Peter?
But you're making them public anyway. Well, I guess the unedited versions might make.
Oh, the unedited versions. So
interesting listening.
Oh, dear Lord, but I don't think about that. Okay, yes, I would pay. Yes, I'm nodding vigorously. Okay. Yes, I would pay.
Okay.
No, but, I guess I mean this. It depends on what the price is. If there was embarrassing information and I knew that I could make it go away for $500, sure. But I mean, like we talked about this earlier in the week. There was an esports, and I think I might have mentioned this on the previous podcast. There was an esports organization that was breached, and an attacker got hold of not passwords or login credentials, but they got, I think, 1.5 million email addresses, and also the messages of the people on that esports forum. So they had all of their sort of forum posts and email, or not email, I guess, like a forum post messages, like direct messages back and forth to one another for these gamers on this esports site. And the attacker demanded $100,000 from the company, and the company didn't pay. So now this information's out in the wild. And I probably wouldn't have paid either. I mean, it's not, like, there's no credit card information, there's no login data, like, it doesn't seem like information that valuable. But then I thought about it, I'm like, well, if I'm one of these members of this esports forum, and I have incriminating information on there, like, let's say you've been harassing somebody on there, and now that information can be publicly tied to you, your actual identity, you might pay some money to make that go away. I'm not saying it would result in criminal charges. I mean, that sort of thing is very hard to sort of lead to actual criminal charges. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe. Depends on what the price is, I guess.
Well, so here's my take on it. I'm the head of the Black Hat Mafia, let's say, and I've got all my guys, my people,
sure,
are sending out lots of ransomware. And I'm looking at my quarterly reports from my accountant,
right,
who's telling me we've got all these guys, all these people.
Yep.
I don't want, you know, it could be whoever.
Victims.
They're sending out all this ransomware stuff, and they're infecting some number of computers, and they're it's marketing, because they've got this thing where if you buy now,
get
for half a Bitcoin. If you wait 72 hours, the price goes up. If you wait another 72 hours, you know, they're trying to create a sense of urgency in their victims.
Right.
They're basically trying, you know, it's just like marketing cell phones or McDonald's, or hamburgers or cell phones or whatever you're selling. You're trying to create a sense of urgency, get people to be interested and excited and make it important to them to pay and buy your product, which is decrypting their stuff, which, you know, it's a little bit different, but so what's the next step? Well, let's see if we can throw a little more manpower at this, or human power, and get, you know, once we compromise the system, don't just leave it and say, okay, you got to pay up, and in 3 days it'll double.
Right.
And if they don't pay, we just leave them alone. Well, let's see what we can do. Let's see how we can improve our return on investment.
Yeah, put a little bit more into it, get a lot more potentially out of it.
Potentially.
Instead of just $500 for decrypting a simple hard drive.
Right.
And the information doesn't really matter if it's made public. You go after maybe some people that you think might have something to hide.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you. I'm not sure if I would be thrilled about seeing all my personal private stuff off my personal computer, just because it's personal.
Yeah.
Same as I wouldn't want to see my medical records posted anywhere. I mean, it's just sure, it's wrong. True. But the optimistic side, the upside of this is that we're finding, or that what it may be pointing to is that the pure ransomware is not going to work as well anymore. Same as, you know, the 419 scams.
Yep.
I wanna believe that those are, that as the number of people who are susceptible to those scams,
right, dwindles,
right. And even the people that were susceptible the first time, or maybe even the second, third, or fourth time, after three or four times, maybe they'll stop doing it.
Yep.
So that the scammers will drop them from their lists, or maybe not. But the point is that these operations are run as businesses, so they're looking to get the highest yield.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, on, you know, which means that the low hanging fruit has been plucked.
Yeah.
Now it's pretty, you know, the word has been out for the last year or so that if there's any way you can avoid paying any of these ransoms, you shouldn't, because number one, you may not get decrypted anyway.
Well, that's,
and number two, you're funding the criminals.
That's a good point. Do you think the majority of victims of ransomware don't pay for whatever reason, whether they have sufficient backups, which we'll get to in a minute, but or they just, it's not worth it to them, or it's against their principle, they don't want to give in to?
Well, I think there's still a technical a hill to climb if you're getting ransomware. You've got to, you know, assuming that your ransomware attacker is asking for Bitcoin,
right?
You've got to figure out how to go do Bitcoin.
You got to go one of those Bitcoin ATMs.
That's right. Well,
got to Google search it.
Wasn't it last year NASCAR? The NASCAR folks it was like 3 miles away
the NASCAR
from them.
Team. There's a good thing there's a Bitcoin. I wonder how the attackers knew that.
Well, that could be.
Hmm.
I mean, they might be putting up Bitcoin ATMs in areas that they're targeting. But
well,
it would make sense from a business point.
It would. Maybe that's how they did it. It's an important point, though, to follow on what you just said. In Mike's story, Travis Smith from Tripwire, he's the senior security research engineer at Tripwire, he told Mike that, quote, the amount of doxware or other extortion-based pieces of malware aren't increasing at a worrying rate. So it doesn't look we're at a point where we were maybe 12 months ago, when we always seem to be seeing out there is new ransomware variants, new crypto malware variants popping up, and this organization getting hit and that organization getting hit, and just hearing the whispers about the companies that we knew about or were rumored to have been hit but didn't publicly disclose it because maybe they paid or maybe they just didn't want to disclose it. I don't know. What's interesting though to me is you mentioned this sort of the desire on the economic side to up the ante. I'm wondering if there's also a technical component to this, because I've talked with one of our counterparts at the storage team here at TechTarget this week about, you know, how to sort of deal with ransomware backup. You know, make sure you have everything backed up, make sure that you have everything saved. You have off-site backup that's not connected to your network, or you know, it's cloud service or whatever outside your data center. But in a case like this, that doesn't matter if you have the information backed up. Yeah, you got a copy of your data. That's not the issue. The issue is you don't want it to be public. And to me, that's where it gets interesting, because maybe the attackers aren't going to be going after specific individuals. They're not all going to go after politicians and government officials that they want to, that really don't want to face public scrutiny over embarrassing stuff. But maybe it's just, maybe they are just hitting enterprises. Maybe they are just hitting, executives or employees that, like you said, the instinct probably is, oh, I don't want all of this stuff out there. I mean, you think about just the correspondence, the information that would reflect on you, but then there's correspondence with other people. You don't want to put them in the line of fire. You don't want to expose data that could maybe, I mean, you think about your friends and your families and your colleagues, their private information, their contact information, all the stuff that they send you that's going to be exposed to, that's a big burden. So to me, this is, you know, I sat here at the start of the week and I thought, or start of last week when we started hearing about Doxware, and I thought, you remember when I said Doxware? Man, what's that all about? You know, I just thought it seemed silly, and I was skeptical. I don't. Huh. Were you skeptical?
It's been clear for a long time. I mean, people get harmed.
You're way ahead of me on this.
You're overthinking things. Okay. But not that there's anything wrong with that. But the thing is that with the Doxware, it is kind of an obvious step for the criminals to take it to that level. Clearly there are things that I don't, you know, don't tell me if you don't have anything to hide, then you don't have anything to hide, or whatever phrase is that people say you shouldn't be worried if you have nothing to hide, then what are you worried about? Yeah. But the fact is that everybody's got, maybe not that something that they want to hide, but
it's something they want to keep private.
Their personal stuff and it should be personal. This is an important thing, this whole privacy issue.
And it's this is coming about at a time where people, I think, are more aware of that than ever. You know, how vulnerable they are online.
Yeah.
Digital information about themselves. And so what's the answer? I mean, so the more I thought about this, after I came to accept that, this is actually pretty... This seems like a natural evolution of ransomware to go after stuff that, you know, it doesn't matter if you back it up, and you could potentially, depending on how embarrassing the information is, you could demand more money. So let me ask you this, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a good thing? Well, a lot of people said, ransomware is a good thing because it's everyone knows about it. Everyone, all the CIOs and CISOs, they're scared of this. They don't want to get hit with it. It's a sort of a tangible threat. It's got a name. It sounds scary. You know, we heard about all these experts saying that this is sort of spurred security teams and enterprises to invest more in security. Good for them. Is Doxware, could this be a benefit to things like encryption? Because what else is gonna protect? I mean, how else are you gonna defend against this? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and I think a lot of us have been carried away over the last 20 years or so with the internet is amazing.
It really is.
And computers, they're just incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible what the people are doing with the cyber now.
The cyber is just off the chain, Peter. This is really what
it's
we're
totally
talking
off the hook.
It's off.
It is. But the thing is that, like, for example, thumbprints to get into your telephone.
Yeah.
I never really liked that idea.
Yeah.
Even when I had a phone that could do that,
yeah.
I didn't use the thumbprint because I don't feel comfortable with it, because it puts out this piece of authentication, this authentication factor, my fingerprint is now out into the universe, and I don't have control over it anymore.
Well, technically it's hardware based, but we're fast approaching the time when Touch ID and things like that are going to be used. I don't care what Apple says; they're going to be used for off device authentication, cloud, whatever.
Sure, but
iPay.
The thing is that when we don't understand these things before we implement them, it means that we don't necessarily know what the byproduct of these decisions.
So unintended consequences.
So biometrics, I'm very uncomfortable with the whole concept of it, because it means that if somebody can control my body, they can control access to whatever I have access through that biometric.
Yeah.
We've seen this with law enforcement that are taking people's phones and forcing
literally
their thumb onto the unlock thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that. You know, what can we do to prevent? You know, we can try not to, or at least to be aware of what we're doing when we're doing things that are being recorded. Yep. So basically, like every time you take an Uber or a Lyft, every time you use your phone, every time you go onto a website. I mean, these are all things from your phone that you can just be aware that they expose you, that there's an attack surface there. So closing the attack surface down, keeping data off of your,
deleting.
Really deleting, or not even really deleting, because if it's deleted from a directory, if just the directory.
Yeah, but if it's in memory.
Yeah,
these guys are tricky now.
But they are. But if they're not, if they're just looking to see what they can find.
True. They might not look that hard. They might just do a surface scan.
Right. I mean, if you have a file called Mistress Phone Numbers.
Oh, that would be bad.
It would be.
Yeah.
If you, but if you don't have that file, then maybe it's a little bit. They're not going to start with the fine tooth combs right away because they're looking for the low hanging fruit.
Right.
So if you have a file with mistress's phone numbers on it, let's say, that's going to be, they're going to hit that one before they hit the one that's accounts receivable for 2007.
For
this purpose. But yeah, just being aware of how much exposure there is, I think a lot of people would be very surprised. I know I'm surprised.
Well,
when I think about it for myself, and I try to be aware of it.
And you're pretty astute. Well, speaking of exposures, related item. I'm glad you mentioned this. A couple quick items to get to before we wrap up. This was pretty shocking. The MongoDB configurations that exposed a number of instances of the database that were apparently open to basically anyone that knew what they were doing. This came from a security researcher, a Microsoft developer out of Norway. He found that something like 28,000 attacks where an exposed MongoDB instance was just an attacker went into one of these DBs, like unfettered, didn't even have to like infect the instance with ransomware because you could just waltz right in, copy the data, and then delete it. So literally, someone would go into their MongoDB instance, and a lot of these were outdated. They were unused. They hadn't been touched in a while, apparently, but some of them were used. So you go into your MongoDB and there's no data. And there's a note there saying, a ransom note saying, if you want your data, you got to pay this. I literally, I just literally walked into your database, your totally unsecured database, copied all of your data, deleted it, pay me money. That's terrifying.
It is. And the problem is, I blame it all on IBM. When they rolled out the personal computer back in 1980.
You're going back a ways, but yeah.
I am going. But personal computers are great. Actually, we can blame it on Apple because they came out with the Apple II.
Let's spread the blame.
So there's plenty of blame to go around. The point is that when we have personal computers, that means, or a lot of us take that to mean that we can do whatever we want with our computers. You're shaking your head.
No.
This is why there's tens and hundreds and perhaps more thousands of databases that are out there with interesting or important information to somebody.
Yeah.
That have no proper security controls on them. And we're not even talking about the businesses and the companies and organizations that have these things. 10, 15, 20 years ago, people weren't really thinking about this kind of thing when they were rolling.
Internet facing? No.
I'm going to make my own website.
Yeah, I'm going to make my own website. Yeah. Roll out a database. It's all good.
It's easy. HTML.
Yeah. And then you get suckered.
That's right. Well, so there's, again, we're in the beginning of this whole revolution.
Yeah.
So we're learning that, we got to have a roof on our car, not just, be open to the air.
And seatbelts.
Seatbelts, air cushions.
An airbag would be
airbags,
nice.
Airbags, the whole thing.
Oh. Agree. Speaking of
anti-lock brakes.
Yeah, speaking of that, we've talked a lot about, here's another item, this will be the last one for the day. We talked a lot about, you've been on the theme of, for the IoT threats, some type of government, not advocating government action, but saying that, hey, yeah, it's not until, you know, buildings start collapsing that the government says it's time for a building code, or people start flying, you know, out of their Model T cars that say, hey, maybe we should have some regulations for seatbelts and safety measures for automobiles. Well, in a post-Mirai botnet world, we have our first, I guess our first government action. I know there may have been others, but I think this is the first one. Federal Trade Commission, FTC, filed a lawsuit against D-Link for failing to secure routers for the past, not just like few months, but for the past 10 years. And, you know, again, senior reporter Michael Heller at Search Security did a story on this and talked about how, you know, at least for the folks that he talked to, that the timing on this was not coincidental. I don't know how many D-Link devices. I think D-Link might have been implicated in, or not implicated, but a couple D-Link devices may have been used in some of these router IoT DDoS attacks. But it's not like they were the, you know, the Chinese manufacturer of the DVRs. But the timing of this seems to be like, oh, we, you know, the government's noticing and they're going to do something about it. So how do you feel about that, Peter?
Well, you know, how do you feel about government regulation? Do you want to drown the government, cut it down to where you can drown it in a bathtub? Or do you find that the government provides helpful services and helpful regulations that keep us safe? I mean, this is more, I don't know how many people have been physically harmed in cyber attacks so far. You know, when numbers of people get hurt because of this, then it's going to be a whole different
thing. Financially hurt. I mean Dyn was, I mean, you're disrupting the economy with an attack of that scale that shuts down access to a number of major sites on, even though it was a Friday. But like, I think the money is what spurred obviously people into act here. But
yeah, I but at the same time, I mean, there's a lot of people getting damaged by this stuff, and it's not gonna go away. And law enforcement so far has been, you know,
what can you do to stop it?
Yeah, and so it's either educate everybody to be more security conscious, or find some way to impose a regulations on everybody,
incentivize,
or let the market sort it out. That's another option. Yeah. I mean, that's an option that I have a feeling is more likely to be proposed than adding more regulations going forward from here. But at the same time, you know, how well is the industry going to police itself?
Right.
And who else can force that beside the market or the governments?
That's a great point.
So
yeah, I doubt this is the last we'll see of this type of action for IoT or router enabled attacks like this. I think this is going to be a big theme in 2017. So we'll see where it goes. But Peter, I guess that does it for this episode. Thank you for sitting in with me.
Always a pleasure
discussing
to be here.
New threats and new concerns. And I don't think we got too bent out of shape. I think we were pretty calm.
Yeah.
Pretty calm. Watch, we're probably getting hit with doxware right now. We don't even know it. And we're going to be in a panic.
Right, with those unedited versions of the podcast.
Oh, the unedited. Okay, so we got to end here. We have some unedited. We have B-side B-roll. B-roll. Whatever they call it. We gotta do some cleanup of our machines here. So thanks for listening to this episode of the Risk and Repeat podcast. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.